Lateral Thinking, broadcasting weekly from New York City. I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer,
the displaced playwright. Lateral thinking is sideways thinking. It unspools the mind.
It's not logical.
Its conclusions, if any, are unforeseen. On this show, we will be joined by Chris Cerf, co-author with Henry Beard of Spenglish and Encyclopedia Paranoica, and on his own, A Skunk in My Bunk, compulsive writer and songsmith David Finkel, Maggie Paley, author of More Than Just the Book of the Penis, and audio engineer and musical perpetrator Bob Auld to discuss home cooking. Well, it's a real oddity in all our home cooking situations because we're all at home.
There's much more home cooking nowadays than there used to be.
I'm telling you, there's a lot of home cooking going on. David, what is your conception here of home cooking? Is it just that it happens in the home?
No, my conception of home cooking is the first home I lived in was my grandmother's home. Because she was a widow, and mom and dad lived there. It was the war was just starting up, World War II, and she was cooking, and she was had four children, and she knew how to cook. And my mother knew how to bake, and she made desserts. And when I was 6 years old, we moved to the suburbs and discovered that mother had never learned how to cook, and only knew how to make desserts. And so we ate out quite frequently. And that's what I think of home cooking. I've been looking for it ever since we left Grandma's house.
Oh.
No, my mother moved on. I'm always bashing poor old Mom.
She
tried hard. Yeah. And she, at the end there, she was reading Gourmet magazine. Oh, let's say that for her. And she actually learned how to cook, and I should shut up. Thank you.
She learned how to order those steaks from that.
Right. Mail order steaks.
And well, I think, what dish did she learn how to make? Quiche, was it? From Gourmet magazine? It was some elaborate thing.
Oh, I'm sure, yes. Of course, she was a fabulous chef and a world-famous five-star in the Michelin.
And a good frozen food, too. She did make that.
Just about invented bird's eye.
Look at the way the guys put down their moms. Okay. Well, my grandmother was a terrible cook too. Really terrible. And although she had a standard meal that she made every time we visited that involved matzo ball soup, a weird thing with baked and burned eggplant that was a Romanian dish she learned from her husband, gefilte fish, followed by chicken and boiled beef, both, and a potato, and the world famous, I mean, everybody would ooh and ah when finally we got through all that awful food and got to the dessert, which was the world famous, what was it, raisin cake? Some kind of cake that was world famous in that very small world. So, Chris, do you have a memory of grandma's home cooking or anybody's home cooking?
Well, I never got to taste my grandma's cooking. My mom had only a few dishes that she knew how to make. So when it was her decision to cook, we always had the same thing. She had a weird kind of baked bean thing with other stuff put in it. That's the only way I can describe it. Whenever I think of my mother's cooking, that's what I think of. Luckily, I married someone who's an amazing cook.
Really?
And she cooks Portuguese food because her dad is from the Azores, and she learned all those recipes. In fact, Catherine's parents published a cookbook of old Portuguese recipes. So that's been one great thing about the COVID situation is we've been having amazing food at home every night.
That's great. That is good. Okay. David Finkel, are you in the COVID situation, or are you ordering in, or are you cooking up a storm?
I'm in the COVID situation. So much so that, and I'll get to my grandmother in a couple seconds, but for the first time in my life, I am cooking at home, and I've gotten myself a toaster oven. So that really, that was a serious move. So I'm committed now because I've got the thing. I've spent money for it. Well, actually, it was given to me, but somebody spent money for me. So I'm going to be cooking home. I will try some of my grandmother's mother, was a great cook. My father's mother, I don't know whether she ever cooked at all. She ran the Finkel's department store with my father's father. But my grandmother was, her specialties were sweet and sour cabbage, and she was a great cook and a great baker. And her and she made cherry pie and apple pie. And my mother really learned how to cook from her mother. And so I was brought up with good home cooking. The problem was my father only wanted the staples. He'd only want meat and potatoes, so my mother could never really experiment, and that was a little bone of contention in their marriage.
No vegetables in your family?
Oh yeah, we always had. Oh, always. He always had to have a vegetable.
Your father was a doctor. You'd think he.
Oh, we always had to have it. My father was a doctor, but he wasn't great at nutrition for some reason.
So many doctors and still aren't. Bad at nutrition. Good at pills, though, right? And injections. So, Maggie, how's your home cooking memory?
Well, one of my grandmothers was already dead when I was born. And the other one was not a cook. She, at the age of 90, she could still lift her leg all the way up on the sink and touch her nose to the knee. But she was not a cook.
Who needs to cook when you can do
that's
that?
Right.
Exactly.
That's right. Did she have a husband, a grandfather in the picture?
Yeah, my grandfather, but he was in a wheelchair. He was a painter. She was a singer. He was a painter, and then he got something called Berger's disease. Which,
wow. What a lot of fun that family sounds like.
Yeah, right.
Touching their toes.
But my mother.
Being in a wheelchair. No
eating. My mother.
No eating at all so far.
Right, that's right. But my mother was a good cook. But she didn't teach me anything.
Oh, okay. So that's a big vacuum right there. But
right,
didn't your mother? I remember a delicious dish that my mother made. It was called canned vegetable soup. And she made it with her. This was the thing that was so interesting. David Finkel's mentioning the little toaster oven reminds me of this gadget that my mother had that she served. She could serve a grilled cheese sandwich with that soup, which was a vegetable beef soup. I remember the title. I remember the soup label, as a matter of fact. It's Andy Warhol's favorite. And she made these grilled cheese sandwich with a thing that it was like a long metal stick with a kind of room for a sandwich, but it made it round. It would round out the edges of the sandwich so that it was like a little atomic pie.
No, we had with
cheese.
Janet, we had one too.
Wasn't it great?
What
are you talking
about?
It was a grilled cheese sandwich maker.
Yeah,
but
it was kind of, you needed this big piece of equipment only to make grilled cheese sandwiches.
What else?
Why not?
What else could you make in it? Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't think that was the main idea.
Except didn't it heat them? Ours heated.
It melted.
Peanut butter heated, does that work?
I don't know.
I can tell you, it does work, I can tell you. We made grilled cheese, we called it the flying saucer sandwich maker. And you put a piece of bread in and whatever and then you closed it up and held it over the flames on the stove and then turned it over once and then you got a grilled cheese sandwich or hot peanut butter and jelly. This is quite popular in my home, yes.
Okay.
This show is making me so hungry.
none of these delicious foods do they deliver or do you think of when you're ordering your food? Bob Wall, do you have a memory of anything fantastically yum as a child?
Yeah, my mother made great banana bread.
Oh, wow.
Oh, do you have the recipe?
No. And she made great regular bread, too. And maybe we should...
And you know what else? All of these dishes would go really well with this food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the French fried sauce with the awesome fare, with your fava on the side. I don't want pork chops and bacon, that won't awaken my appetite inside. I want the frimp frap sauce with the awes and fay, with your fava on the side. Now a fella's really got to eat, and a fella should eat right. Five will get you ten. I'm gonna feed myself right tonight. I don't want fish cakes and rye bread.
You heard what I said.
Waiter, please serve mine fried. I want the frimp frap sauce with the awesome fare, with your fa-fa on the side.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. Believe me, I'm never satisfied. I want the frimp frap sauce with the awesome fare, with your fa-fa on the side. I don't want pork chops and bacon, that won't awaken my appetite inside. I want the frame, frame sauce with the awesome fare, with your fa-fa on the side. Now a fella's really got to eat, and a fella should eat right. Five will get you ten. I'm gonna feed myself right tonight. Fish cakes and rye bread. You heard what I said. Waiter, waiter, please serve my fare. I want the frimp frap sauce with the awesome fare, with your fa-fa on the side.
Chafafa on the side. If only my grandmother had recognized that as a, it was molasses cake, and it came with homemade applesauce, fresh cooked applesauce. It was about 7 courses to that meal that she killed herself for. That was hard work, wasn't it, to make home cooking? As I heard it, the other grandmother, whom I really didn't know or didn't eat any of her delicacies, she rolled noodles every Friday before sundown so that people could partake of the Luxian Kugel, as they called it. That was the specialty of that maison.
Noodles?
Well, that's how they're made. Didn't you ever watch a pizza being made?
No, I guess not.
they used to roll the dough in the window of the pizza parlor in olden times. Remember? You could buy a slice through a window, but you watch the guys rolling the dough flat. So, the noodle thing was very, very similar. And then after they finished rolling the dough out, they, I think something used something like a chopped liver cutter to cut lines in the, like spaghetti. Like spaghetti, but they did it by hand.
Just to go back for a second, can any of you tell me what chafafa is?
I think that's the idea. They can't.
they're just making it up.
That's je ne sais quoi.
I've always wondered. I assumed it was literal. That's because my mind is literal.
I think it's the je ne sais quoi. Maybe the frim fram sauce. Well, did anyone ever have anything as good as that? Was there a frim fram sauce? There was a great restaurant in the village. It's gone now, recently gone, called El Charo, Mexican and Spanish. And they had a frim fram sauce on their enchiladas. Do you remember that? It was a very special Mexican-Spanish taste. Now it's a steakhouse. Did anyone...
You know that...
Yeah, sorry, David.
I was just going to say the disappearance of El Charro and places like it may mean, with what we're going through, so many restaurants are going to close, we're going to be condemned to do home cooking for
all
the places we love are going to be gone.
Well, we have survived on, I'd say, pretty much a vegetarian diet. We have not ordered in anything whatsoever throughout this since March. And we've eaten twice pizza slices on ventures outside, not order in. Let's hear what's going on in the ordering out department. Nobody's ordering out. Nobody.
We haven't been. We get those meals that you can prepare. You know, from Fresh Direct, for example.
Now, how does that work? You get little.
They're
chopped,
really good.
You
get everything all ready to cook. And they give you all the ingredients and directions, and comes out pretty well.
Does it taste like home cooking, or do you make it?
Yeah, it really does.
It does?
It's high quality food.
What was the best meal of the quality of the month?
Oh gosh, that's hard to pick. We've been getting a lot of vegan things. They have they have a lot of pastas that are actually made from beans and things, rather than flour, and they're great.
And how do they hold up against the Portuguese cooking?
I go for the Portuguese, basically.
I go for the Portuguese, too. Yeah.
But the vegan stuff is just fine. I like it a lot.
So I'm curious as to what, David Finkel, what you've made so far in your toaster oven that's more gourmet than what you would have had before.
I've made chicken. I've made baked a yam in there. Which really was delicious, but I've only started using it in the last couple of days. So you'll have to ask me on later about this. But what I want is a lot of recipes.
Okay, toaster oven.
For a toaster oven.
Because it's really an oven, isn't it? It's just a better. A smaller version of the oven I can now get rid of.
Well, we're not going to give you a recipe for turkey.
No.
It's not going to happen.
That won't do. But the turkeys are way beyond my my pay grade at this point, right. I would think.
I think so. And also, you can't really share the turkey with only yourself.
No, it's cooking for one these days.
Well, several of us are twosome, so you can cook for one other person. Did you have David Dozer a joke about cooking?
So about home cooking, I'm sure I read it in one of Bennett Cerf's books, possibly in Try and Stop Me, or possibly in Shake Before Using. But anyway, a businessman is out of town, and he comes out of his hotel in the morning, and he's a little lonely, he's homesick, and he goes down to the corner, he sees a coffee shop, it says home cooking, and he goes in and he says, hey, this is for me, give me a glass of orange juice with seeds in it, some pits, I want some coffee with coffee grounds in it, undercook some eggs, and burn me two slices of toast. And the counterman says, hey, what's going on? And he says, well, you know, I'm away from home, a little homesick, and I miss my wife's cooking. So there it is, another anti-woman joke, thanks to Bennett Cerf.
All his fault.
That baked bean dish.
There's a spin on that joke.
Yeah.
And it wasn't such a joke for him, but our late great friend Marshall Efron. Used to say, whenever I hear the words home cooking, my blood runs cold.
Well, he also what would you call it? Made the lemon pie inedible because he read all the ingredients in a frozen lemon pie. It was on the Great American Dream Machine.
Yeah, lemon cream pie.
Yeah.
No lemon, no cream, no pie. Nothing in it. It's all fake. Everything is fake. Yeah.
Oh, that's like an egg cream with no egg and no cream in it.
That's right. An egg cream. Yeah, that's home cooking. At the famous...
I could do that.
Sylvia and Luncheonette. Sylvia and Ben had a luncheonette. They learned how to make egg cream, sold comic books. It was home cooking. when you were away from home during the lunch hour. Nobody has a microwave here, huh?
Oh, I've got a microwave. Yeah.
You already have a microwave and you needed a home baker too, David Finkel?
Well, I think that I can do more. I can do more creative stuff in my for frozen foods. Now I'm making things. I need something to make it in. I can't. I could make some things whatever you call it, microwave. No, I like the idea of expanding my cooking horizons now.
Oh, absolutely. We'll send you. Okay. We'll be sending you all our thoughts and hopes and dreams for home cooking, because we are basically eating whatever the health food store sends us, and we've grown sort of addicted to the pure and perfect radish, the excellent organic celery stalk, the perfect organic egg. Yuck, are you saying?
I'm saying yuck.
Wow.
I'm saying yuck.
Oh, God. Wow. Yeah, watch your
radish
health, girl.
Radish and celery.
Celery. Ooh. That great butter lettuce that comes straight from the earth.
That sounds a little better.
Bunch of whole food, whole fat yogurt, and lots of berries, and tofu. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I have a frying pan, and I use a frying pan instead of one of David Finkel's famous
toaster oven things.
And I use a frying pan, and I go to Whole Foods and I get stuff that's already pre-cooked like Kung Pao chicken, and then
how do you personalize it?
You don't personalize it. You just well,
eat it.
What I do is I get a separate grains thing, a package of grains, and that package of grains, all you do is you put it in a bowl and you leave it outside, and eventually
leave it outside where? Outside your door?
No, sorry. You leave it on the counter, and it warms up enough, and then I put the Kung Pao chicken on that when the Kung Pao chicken is done.
Well, when the time comes for people to come to your house, keep that one
I'll
in
make
mind.
Kung Pao chicken. Yes.
This is what you would have if you came to someone else's house.
Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and apricot too. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you figs and dates and grapes and cakes. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you everything. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you marriage ring and a pomegranate. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you peach and pear and I love your hair. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you east side. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you everything, everything, everything. Come on to my house.
Rosemary Clooney, we're told, didn't like that song when she first got it from Mitch Miller, and he said, you either record it or you're fired, and she sang it, and it became the greatest hit of her lifetime. But Chris Cerf, don't you know something about who wrote the lyric to that?
It's quite an amazing story. It was co-written by a guy named Ross Bagdasarian, who some of you may remember because he created Alvin and the Chipmunks and all those amazing records that you heard from them.
Oh, right.
But his cousin was William Saroyan, and he co-wrote the song with Ross. Apparently, they wrote it on a car trip. They just were together, and that's what resulted. I know all this because Aram Saroyan, the wonderful poet who was William's son, is a close friend of mine, as was his late sister Lucy. So they used to talk about that song quite a lot.
They did?
Yeah.
Sure. Did they play it all the time at the Saroyan
house? No, but it was part of family lore.
Family lore, peach and a pear, and I love your hair. I mean, I can see that it sounds simplistic, but it does grow on you after a while, doesn't it? And I
It made Rosemary Clooney famous,
I
think.
It did, it did. It made her famous, put her on the top. So I'm upset at hearing the word yuck attached to my organic radishes and celery. There's a reason to eat like that. David Dozer, I'll ask you to fill in a little on why one would eat like that.
According to some medical advisors of ours, radishes are extremely nutritious, and so is celery. And in fact, all those vegetables, each and every, all the different ones, they have different things in them. And they're all good for you. They're not manufactured. They're not full of chemicals. And you can yuck away, but they're not corn syrup. And they're, they're not absolutely delicious. I put hot sauce on mine.
There you go, the
frim-frim
sauce.
I think radish.
Kafafa on the side.
Well, no, I'm not on the radish, but I'm on the broccoli and the onion and the we steam
those
broccoli
are
and
better,
onion.
Broccoli and onions, but I think radish and not celery are about the two worst possible vegetables. They're tasteless.
I have to take great objection to that.
I do too.
I think radishes have great taste.
Oh, they do.
They have a kind of bitter, strong taste.
I agree.
And the thing about celery is you can put things on it. You can dip celery.
That's right.
And you can get any kind of great dip with celery.
You can dip into a great piece of celery. That's right. You can stick anything in and you can use it if you don't have a plate.
Are we having a food fight?
And if you happen to go to Gene's, the great neighborhood restaurant on West 11th Street.
That's in New York City.
In New York City, they bring you a platter, which you don't pay for, a nice free platter of celery and radishes and carrots.
And olives.
And olives.
You know, they used to do that at every restaurant. Every restaurant. Maybe that's why they don't have restaurants anymore.
What?
You don't get that extra little doggy bag full of celery, radishes, and olives. And what was the other? Carrot sticks.
Carrots. Carrots and olives. It's the other two I hate.
Not to mention breadsticks and baskets of bread. It used to be staples of home cooking type restaurants before everything closed down. There were no restaurants. But there
crudité?
That's what it's called.
I believe we went to a restaurant in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and white tablecloths, and immediately they brought out the big bowls of radishes, celery, carrot sticks, olives, black and green, and it was standard. Maybe a little cottage cheese in there, I don't know.
I think you're right.
Yeah, they do that at the Isle of Capri, the restaurant I've been to with you, Janet, which I love that
A
place.
Great restaurant. Is it,
I haven't
is
been there for years. Is
61st and 3rd.
That's home
I've been
cooking.
Going there for more than half my life.
Half of your life. And is it still around?
It's still there. At least it was before all this started.
I was crossing.
I think because that family owns the building, so they might have a chance to keep it going.
To stay there, yeah.
That's the story on Jeans. They own the building, and those are the restaurants that will stay in business.
That's right.
Because they don't have to worry about their rents going up.
That's right. And they have that. You know, you might stop in at Jeans and ask for. Oh, you can't do that, can you? You have to have. You can call them up though.
You can take out and delivery. There's the take out and delivery is now a very common policy around the city.
Right. And maybe around the world. you know?
Probably.
Why not? If you're stuck in the pandemic with a family that you don't care for, you've got to hope that grandma's a good cook. You know?
If she's still living. Mine is not. Neither of mine.
Neither of mine. Mine. Yeah. But no, yeah. And nobody missed my grandmother's meal. Did anybody have a cake that everybody loved? A cake for, that you had to cut out yes. when you realized how bad sugar was for you?
My mother made a great cake. And she learned it from her mother. And it was an open cake. It was
her mother who touched her toes. Her mother touched her toes at the sink.
No, that was my father's mother.
Oh, okay. The other grandma.
My mother's mother was dead by the time I was born. Okay. But before she died, she made this great cake. And it had slices of fruit on the top of the cake. And it was more like a pie, except anyway, I wrote a piece about it, about how when I was much, much older and my mother was still alive, I asked her to please give me the recipe, and she did. And then I made it, and eventually I sold the story to the Oprah magazine, and then they got it. I don't remember who they went to, McCall's or something. They got the recipe really down good.
You mean they pre-cooked for you, so that just in case yes. you weren't accurate, the recipe
right.
could be foisted upon millions, perhaps, of
right,
other
right,
women
right,
trying
exactly.
trying to do home cooking. That's right. That's right.
You exactly. called Maggie. You called it an open cake. What is an open cake?
That means that
it's a pie.
It's like a pie, only it's a cake. It's a cake because
because you said so.
Because I said so. That's right.
There is nothing like a pie that is really a
donut.
It's like a cake.
Or
well, you've cleared that up for me, and I want the recipe for that too.
Okay. And you should send that recipe to this guy because he'll add it into his. What do you call it? His working agenda. Is that a word for a bunch of recipes?
Cookbook is a word for.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate too. Here's cacciatore, Dory. Taste the bologna, Tony. Everybody eats when they come to my house. I fix your favorite dishes, hoping this good food fills ya. Work my hands to the bone in the kitchen alone. You better eat if it kills ya. Pass me a pancake mandrake, having a derby irvy. Look in the fendel mendel. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Hannah, Davy, Tommy, Dora, mandrake. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Pasta fazula, tolula. Oh, do have a bagel, bagel. Now don't be so bashful, Nashville. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Hey, this is a party, Marty. There, you get the cherry, Jerry. Now look, don't be so picky, Mickey. 'Cause everybody eats when they come to my house. All of my friends are welcome. Don't make me coax you, moax you. Eat the tables, the chairs, the napkins, who cares? You gotta eat if it chokes you. Oh, do have a knish, knishya. Ask him the latke, matke. Chili con carne for Bonnie. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Face, Buster, Cher, Chops, Fump. Everybody eats when they come to my house. when they come to my house.
Oh, man, it makes you miss people. Cab Calloway. Gosh, can you imagine that song being, Curry, that song being instructive now? People would have dinner and die.
Well, does anybody know anyone who's ever eaten napkin? He talks about eating in napkins. Does anybody?
Oh, yes. We had a friend.
There was in New York a famous napkin eater.
Really?
Yeah, you may, some of you may know this.
Cloth or paper?
Did he swallow it?
Yes, Sam Cohn,
yes,
William Morris
right.
agent, would go to the Russian Tea Room every day for lunch, and everybody could see him, those of us who were all there often during a period of time, and he'd sit at his table, sometimes with Meryl Streep or one of the great people who represented, Diane Wiest, and he'd eat. He'd just chew on his napkins and swallow them.
Did he do that in order to entertain them, or no. did he just do it?
I think he liked them. He liked it.
They were very good at the Russian tea room.
He liked the
taste. Yeah.
They had particularly good. They were
because they were Russian napkins.
That's right, and they cooked them in a pressure cooker.
Remember, any of you are basketball fans? Jerry Tarkanian, the coach of UNLV, used to eat his towel or chew on it. All through games.
Severin Darden, the great Second City actor, chewed his napkins too. And he ate sticks of butter, plain. No bread. No bread. That was his own food. He was from New Orleans. Now, I don't know that they ate that kind of food in New Orleans. I doubt it. But he did go to town on his napkins. Yeah.
I did specify that there were paper napkins. Maybe I didn't.
No, you did not. Where'd they have paper? Paper napkins at the Russian Tea Room?
I know, that's surprising. Now I'm wondering whether they gave him paper napkins special or what it was.
Yeah.
Never occurred to me there.
They had the same...
Too late now.
Like the Sam Cohn pile of napkins, and he was served his own napkins and his own martini, if necessary.
Well, I guess if you spill different kinds of food on them, they have different flavors, you know.
Right, that's true.
That might be better.
That's right. So.
My agent was married to Sam Cohn. I wonder if she knows anything.
If she served him napkins.
If she served him napkins. Right.
I wonder if they have recipes for napkin specialties.
Well, if you can,
chicken napkin
or that frim-fram sauce.
Yeah, right.
That's a napkin to look for. Yeah. So I want to boost again the health food eating. Sugar is a very tempting thing to be eating in the middle of a pandemic, but I don't think it'll be a protective mechanism for any of us, you know? So that's one of the reasons not to eat any of these great cakes. But our neighbor makes them, and so I don't have to have any responsibility. She does the home cooking. She said, do you like, what was it that first dish? Do you like banana bread?
Banana bread, it was.
Chocolate chip banana bread.
Yes, with chocolate chips. Yeah.
And I thought it would be a delicate little piece of banana bread, but she gave us a vat of banana bread.
About two pounds
of banana bread. So, I mean, I guess they're in the freezer, most of them. Anybody want any defrosted banana bread?
Yes.
Yeah,
actually, comfort food has really been good during the pandemic.
Yeah. What do you mean?
We've been eating very healthily most of the time, but Catherine has been baking gingerbread.
There you go.
Which we haven't had for years, and it's so good. It's a special treat.
Well, ginger's good for you.
Yeah, if you're going to have something with sugar in it, it might as well be that.
And so is garlic's good for you, too. That's another thing.
Eat it every day. Chew, if possible.
Yes.
Our doctor also prescribed ginger root to slice off a little ginger and chew it. I know I'm making Maggie say yuck, but it's apparently the way to long life. We'll see. It's certainly not a way to have guests in your house. Hi, would you like some celery and ginger root to chew on?
With a little garlic.
Little garlic and a big lot of gin.
right.
Not bathtub gin either, luckily. Gin also seems to be a good dish, don't you think? It's got all those wonderful juniper berries and other herbs in it. It probably, you know, gets rid of every virus. Who will know? Now, let's play as a conclusionary type of musical piece this, but listen carefully for the intruder in the musical rendition.
Shouting and shouting and Mammy's little baby loves shouting and bread. Mammy's little baby loves shouting and shouting and Mammy's little baby loves shouting and bread. Put on the skillet, put on the lead. Mammy's gonna make a little shouting and bread. That ain't all she's going to do. Mammy's gonna make a little coffee too. Mammy's little baby loves shouting and shouting and Mammy's little baby loves shouting and bread. Mammy's little baby loves shouting and shouting and Mammy's little baby loves shouting and bread. Me with the skillet, cotched me with the lead, cotched me with the gal eating shorting and bread. Got six for the skillet, six more for the lead, and fine for stealing that fine bread.
Who said mama's little baby loves shorting and shorting and bread? Who said mama's little baby loves shorting and bread? Some lies some American white man said. Mama's little baby don't like no shouting and bread. Mama's little baby likes truffles. Mama's little baby likes caviar. Mama's little baby likes all the fine things in life. Mama's little baby likes African gold mines. Yeah, African gold mines. Mama's little baby likes African diamond mines.
By the way, who was that Nelson Ed?
That was no Nelson Ed. That was Charles Mingus. Mama's little baby likes truffles. That's the answer. By the way, one of the greatest chefs ever is Charles Mingus. And the other guy was Johnny Mercer. Bob Auld, did he write the original Shortening Bread song?
Oh, no, I think that's an anonymous composition. It's a children's song.
Oh, it is?
I think it's an old folk song.
Oh, yeah. An old folk song.
Oh, really? Spiritual almost.
Okay. Yeah.
But does any, I'm sure someone has a recipe for shortening bread. I'd love to have it.
I bet Mingus had one, I'll tell you, and I bet you it was probably made with brandy and rum.
Is it too late to get his recipe?
It's not too late. It's not too late to get his recipe for eggnog, and I think I could probably reconstruct his recipe for rabbits in wine and kidneys in brandy. I could probably figure that one out, but the fumes would make you drunk. He was definitely a home cook and eater, right? He knew how to enhance the frim-fram sauce of every dish. She was fantastic, yeah, and a great musician as well as a great eater. Maybe the two things went together. All right, we are closing in on the home cooking theme here and wondering if we...
One of the things we haven't talked about is the home cooking all around the world, how different cultures, the home cooking is different, and what we can learn from that, which is what Mengus was sort of throwing into the shortening bread version.
What, shortening a little golden, a little golden eye?
Yeah, things from other places.
Like what?
Like what?
Well, I wasn't brought up with chitlins and collard greens, but I've come to like those things because I wanted to try them out. Mm-hmm. You hear about what other people eat and how good it sounds, and I was brought up on a very limited, and we're Jewish, basically Jewish recipes.
And you know, in China, what they call the Chinese food, they call it food.
Well, so they all go out for American food, do they?
Yeah, they could do that. I don't know if they allow that, but possibly.
Well, we go out for French food, cuisine, I suppose we have to say.
Well, we did until it was named Freedom Food. Remember when they failed to support us during the Iraq War?
Oh, yes, we had Freedom Fries.
That's right.
Right.
And Freedom Toast as well.
Freedom Toast, a good breakfast favorite. Yeah, back then. French don't call them French fries anyway.
No?
They call them pommes frites.
Pommes frites.
Pommes frites.
Right.
That's right. And so do the Belgians, who have more frim-fram sauce for their French fries than almost anybody. They do. Did anyone ever eat a Belgian fry? Somebody's raising a hand there.
What's the difference?
What's the difference? I think it's the frim-fram sauce that comes with it.
No, the mayonnaise. They eat it with mayonnaise.
That's it. They eat it with mayonnaise of various flavors.
That would be better.
It is better than ketchup, I'll tell you. And better for your health.
Exactly.
It's better for your health. That's always a primary consideration. Remember all the, when French sailors settled in New York City, they opened a lot of French restaurants in what would now be pretty easterly, the east-west side, 9th Avenue. Now, I mean, the west side of Manhattan goes to about 15th Avenue. It goes into the river. But back when, that was a very far west destination. Does anybody remember French restaurants of the day and eating perhaps their first, rayfish or escargot or pâté at one of them?
Some of them are still there in New York City on the west side, like Tout va bien.
The first
cuisine or food I think of when I was growing up, French food was considered the top of the line.
Top of the line.
Although I suppose I prefer Italian food to almost anything else at this point.
But those French restaurants that were like neighborhood restaurants on 9th Avenue in the 50s with the French sailors, those were kind of home cooking. Those weren't fancy French dishes, were they?
Me an example of a French restaurant on 9th Avenue in the 50s?
Well, yeah, Chez Napoleon and David mentioned
Tout va bien. A lot of them are between 8th and 9th.
And they were on 9th Avenue.
Yeah.
And Chez Napoleon.
And on 40th. Napoleon.
What? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, 47th Street also had lots of them in the theater district. And you would be able to get a little lunch for about, I don't know, $6.99, including dessert. Nobody remembers this? Chris Cerf, you don't remember this?
I don't. I don't know why I don't.
Because you were
eating. I do remember a funny French restaurant story with my brother, though, because my brother would only eat baby peas and hamburgers wherever he went. And my dad, we went to Paris when we were kids, and my dad took us to Maxime's restaurant.
Wow.
And my brother insisted on having baby peas and a hamburger, and they refused to give it to him. And he started crying and screaming, and they finally did bring it to us, but they were furious. And I don't think my dad ever went back there after that.
Was that his choice or Maxime's?
No, I think he was embarrassed to go back.
Well, don't they have petit pois, little French peas?
They probably did, but they didn't want to make the hamburger with the bun and all. Yeah.
It was a hamburger. That's true. We couldn't get a hamburger at a French restaurant. I bet.
Well, they finally did.
Yeah,
but
they
at a great price to my dad's pride.
Ah, yes, and reputation.
I heard a story about somebody ordered a hot dog at DeSardi's, and they didn't have hot dogs, and the guy insisted, and so they went across the street to Nathan's or somewhere in Times Square, and they came back, and they charged the guy $15 for a dollar hot dog. And he was happy.
That could work.
This
is surprisingly, we've grown away from home cooking to restaurants. Is that, do you think, what we're really yearning for? When we leave our houses, how many restaurants will be there from before, and how many new ones will pop up? The pop-up restaurant. Like the pop-up bar.
If you like Italian, Pasticci's restaurant is in my building, so you're welcome to visit.
And they've never closed?
Well, they're doing takeout right now, and they've got tables outside at the moment.
Well, that's...
Have you been there? Have you been there, Bob, since they've...
I can't miss it because it's in my building.
But you haven't... Do you
Oh, actually, when my wife had her birthday, we ordered from Pasticci's.
Now, there we go again about at home cooking. What is it? Was it always the woman who did the cooking? That it was
Well, she's a much better cook than me, so there we go.
She just so happened.
Yeah.
So
God knows. I mean, my father was never near it. He once called me up to ask, how do you boil water?
Really?
Yes, he really did.
Did you talk him through it, step by step?
Yes, very carefully.
I'm glad you told him, because he was the one that told me how to do it.
My mother used to work on weekends, and my father would take care of me. And I got a cook, and we'd take me to the library. I got a cookbook out of the library, and it said, it had a recipe for potato salad. And I said, I want to make that. And we bought all the ingredients, potatoes and whatever else was necessary for potato salad. I think celery.
Yes.
No radishes, but celery. and I mayonnaise, and my father supervised the stuff. I was going to make it for my mother and serve it to her with hot dogs when she came back from work. And she seemed thrilled at the idea that her little girl had made, under the supervision of Daddy, had come up with this meal. And she bit into the hot dog. That was fine. Maybe she even made it herself. And then she bit into the potato salad, and she said, wait a minute, these potatoes aren't cooked. And my father went, no, I didn't know that. He didn't know that you had to cook the potato first. So he was not the greatest teacher in the world.
One thing we really haven't talked about is cookbooks. If you're doing home cooking, then cookbooks are now. Who has a favorite cookbook or recommend a
Mastering
good cookbook?
The Art of French Cooking, of course.
Well, mine was Alice's Restaurant Cooking.
I was the editor.
Were you really?
At Random House. Alice Brosh.
Oh man.
She was one of the great, great people.
Oh, that...
I've never met anyone who actually used that book till you.
Oh,
right
I
now.
Did. She, you know what her advice was? If you don't have enough dishes to feed everybody, use a tin can. Use a tire hub. Whatever it was no big deal. The idea was to feed your friends.
She was so great, Alice. I think she's still alive, living up in Stockbridge.
That's right. Chili was the greatest recipe. Yeah.
And what about
Arlo Guthrie actually recorded some of the recipes in that book.
And recorded the song.
We bound into the book a record with him singing the recipes.
Oh, how great.
If you got that too.
Oh, can we get that now? That's for home cooking.
Alice
sure.
Waters, Chez Panisse Cookbook.
Okay, you've been listening to The Hour of Lateral Thinking. On this show, you heard us with Chris Cerf, David Finkel, and Maggie Paley discuss home cooking.
This program originates from 5 neighborhoods in New York City.
In one of them, our audio engineer and musical perpetrator is Bob Auld. With special thanks to Theater for the New City's Crystal Field, Pacifica's John O'Mella, WBAI's Reggie Johnson, Sean Rhodes, and Max Schmid, and Louis Armstrong, Nella Fitzgerald, Rosemary Clooney, Cab Calloway, Johnny Mercer, and the great Charles Mingus. I'm Janet Coleman, and
I'm David Dozer,
the displaced playwright.
This has been a production of Cat Radio Cafe,
the feline's favorite radio empire.
And remember our slogan.
Cats like home cooking if home cooking means they hear someone open a can.